Thank you very much. Good morning. I actually feel a little bit of a fraud, partly because Owen made most of that stuff up. So the reality is, it's not nearly as exciting as he has just suggested. But also, I'm very humbled to be here. It's been I only live down the road. I live in Chiswick. I've been here once before because some members of our church, I go to St Paul's Onslow Square, are actually local to Richmond and had a birthday party where you very kindly allowed their daughter to use the hall. So when I pulled back in again, I realised that this is probably a church I need to apologise for because my five-year-old son was running like a lunatic the last time I was in here. So thank you. But actually also to be here at a men's breakfast. We have occasional men's breakfasts at HTB Onslow Square as well. And having spoken at a couple, but also having attended many, I'm hugely aware of how much I always get out of events like this. So I hope to not disappoint, but more importantly, I hope that the Holy Spirit allows whatever I say to be masked by whatever it is he wants to say, and then this is useful to many of you here. So thank you. Thanks for the invite, and really nice to meet those that I have met, and hopefully I'll get to speak to a few more. I recognise a few faces. Clearly, I know Owen, Johannes, we met at Focus last year. Pete, I don't even want to tell you how much Pete knows about me, and that slightly concerns me. So it is. It's great to be here. But when Owen asked me to come and say a few words, and we talked about what it was that I often talk to people about, the concept of my faith, and indeed what it has meant to me, and then the context of which I served, and faith. Former army officers, you've already heard, and as I'll talk about, and what that therefore meant to my job then, and arguably my job now, is one that I'm very happy to share, because I'm acutely aware of the fact that, for me personally, the reality is I would have managed to do nothing if God hadn't helped me to do it. And that's not to say that I've actually achieved very much. In fact, I suspect in this room there are people who do far more than I will ever do, and of course that's the reality of life. You know, we all fit into the little slot that we find ourselves in and do our best if we can, whether that's with our families, whether that's with our church, whether that's with our jobs, whether that's simply within our communities. But for me, faith has been quite important. I was raised in London. I was born to two Nigerian parents who met here in the UK. They met here studying at university. My father was from the north of Nigeria, my mother was from the south. So therefore, everybody said it wasn't going to work. There was absolutely no way that that relationship would work. Enough, 5 years later, the relationship didn't work. So my father left when I was 5 years old. My mother, who still lives in London, and we moved to Hackney from Highbury after probably 8 years. So I was raised largely in Hackney. My mother worked three jobs because, in her mind, being like most good Nigerian parents, schooling is everything, and therefore, in her mind, she needed to do everything she could do to get her kids to schools that she could, that we would benefit from. And the reality is, my sister, who is very bright, could have gone to school anywhere and would do very well. I, on the other hand, needed all the help I could get. So it was really quite helpful that that we managed to achieve a scholarship to go to a decent school. And I only really mentioned that because, again, when you think about the things that kind of shape you as you're growing up and the things that you go on to do, it's impossible to ignore your background. But most importantly for me, my mother has been a very strong woman of faith. That is the gift that she has given her children. I would love to say that rubbed off on me in such a way that it meant my life has always been faith-filled, and the reality is it's not been, and I'll explain a little bit about that. But in terms of consistent prayer, and I now have a young family, a son and a daughter, it's a real lesson. It's a real lesson to me, and so I guess I mentioned that as a kind of first point, because despite the fact it predates my career, it's actually arguably sets the tone for the rest of it. As I mentioned to you, I grew up in London. I went to school out in Hertfordshire. I went to university out in Reading, and then I joined the army. And I joined the army. I'd again love to say I joined the army for really noble reasons, but I didn't at all. I joined the army because when I was at school, I was told I played a lot of rugby, so I was told that actually if you join the army, you can play rugby all the time. Owen, as former regiments, were the Army rugby champions at the time. So actually, why would you not do that? And then I happened to be watching EastEnders, and Grant Mitchell was a paratrooper, and I thought, well, that sounds interesting. And so I looked that up and then realized that was apparently quite hard to get into. I thought, how hard can it be? Yeah, I found out a bit later on. And so I thought, great, I'm going to join the paras. And literally, it was that scientific, which is slightly concerning. I thought I would join for a few years, is the reality. I'll do it for a short while and then leave. And I always said I'll leave when I get bored. So I joined for 3 years and left 17 years later. And I had a great time. I was very blessed. But actually, I was blessed because I was able to meet a lot of extraordinary people, far more capable and far more. I didn't deserve it, is the reality. So I had a short clip. I'm going to show it to you, actually, but only to really give you a taste of them, because we went to the trouble, Nico, very kindly, getting the speakers working. If I don't play it, I suspect he'll be offended. I'd love to suggest that that footage was standard footage that you get in the military following your career, but the reality is clearly that's not the case. And of course, this predates the selfie obsession that most of society has today. But some of that footage was taken actually because of a documentary that was being done at the time. It was a while ago, and I give it to you here now because actually it's one of the things that I got rather quite wrong in hindsight. Given that in this particular case, one of the things that the parachute regiment really doesn't do very much of is publicity, individual publicity like that. And indeed, that wasn't about individual publicity. It was a documentary that Channel 4 were doing, which was talking generally about the military. So that's why there's so much footage, rather than the fact that I'm just a little bit weird. But it was quite important to me at the time because it was quite distracting, and I'm going to come back to distractions in a minute later on, and how my faith has helped with that. In terms of my family, I've already discussed the fact that in essence I served as an army officer and joined quite young. Largely, I swapped one family for another over the years, and my previous military background is largely irrelevant in terms of what we're talking about, but of course very relevant in terms of some of the things that I do right now. And in many ways, if we're talking about faith, then the military is quite a strange place to begin, but maybe not. You know, sat in a church like this and looking up at murals or memorials like that, it's really quite hard to ignore the link between the two things. The reality is, anybody who's served in the military will realize it can, in many ways, be the most godly place in the world and the most ungodly at the same time. And so as a person who stepped into that with a Christian faith, of which there was never any doubt in my mind about my salvation, but lots and lots of doubt in my behavior and the way that I went about my business, that was never lost on me. The parachute regiment is a relatively close-knit community, or in many ways very, very unforgiving if you don't fit into the ways and beings of the parachute regiment, but also very, very welcoming of all very, very different and diverse groups, as long as they conform then once in to the parachute way. That's actually quite interesting when you consider that for many of us, our focus is nothing, is very little other than being ready to go away overseas. And as a young man going into that, a single man going into that, and as a person with very little other commitments, that was very easy to get caught up and fall in with. And I really enjoyed it, is the truth of it. It served me very well, serving alongside, as I said, some amazing people. Completely out of my depth at every stage. And I guess that's really my first takeaway as we talk this morning about the grounding that we face. Quite often I've heard it described talking about the opposite of faith is fear. And I remember hearing that as a sermon many years before I joined the military. And I remember being fearful on a number of occasions. And it wasn't for the things that you would imagine that you might be fearful for. It wasn't ever because you were going to do something dangerous, because you're too rash and too foolish to consider the danger. It was really fear about not achieving what it was that you thought you were being sent to do, or letting people down, or failing at a task. And I think that's quite relevant for all of us in all of our walks of life. Now, of course, the counter for that, as I mentioned, is faith. And in many ways, and I definitely got this wrong at times, it's far too easy for us to have faith in ourselves or faith in a set of circumstances that we feel we can control, and really just a confidence in that. And in many ways, again, that juxtaposition that I've mentioned in the military, where it can be the most godly and the most ungodly place at times. That's a really good manifestation of that. And I saw that many times throughout my life. Whenever things went wrong for me, and indeed generally still now, it's because I'm relying on myself. Rather than acknowledging that there's a lot more to it, and more importantly, I need to put my faith in God. I don't say that from a position of extreme holiness. I just say it from a position of reality. I've literally seen that every mistake I've ever made, if I stopped and looked back on it, it's because I suddenly thought that I could get something done. And that was borne out many times. So as I said, hopefully relevant for most people. I do not think that that's a lesson that is specific to the military. I think that is something that we can probably all relate to as individuals, wherever we find ourselves. We, as a group, as a battalion, although I commissioned into the 2nd Battalion, the Parachute Regiment, we found ourselves deploying a number of occasions on operations. In the short time that I served, I actually joined the Parachute Regiment at a time where Northern Ireland was quite a big focus, and we spent a lot of time as a military over in Northern Ireland, but it was drawing down to an end. And when I was at Sandhurst, Kosovo was happening. The Balkans had Bosnia campaigns were again coming to the back end, and I had missed all of that. And Kosovo was just about to kick off. And I remember distinctly being told, you're joining the Parachute, you're probably not going to go anywhere because generally you sit in a box. But actually, that wasn't the case. We were deployed constantly. So we arrived, as I mentioned, the Balkans, Kosovo, Macedonia, again, another Balkans tour. Whilst I was in Macedonia, the World Trade Centers were very, very, very vividly destroyed. I remember being on a helipad coming off the ground from several days in Macedonia, where we had been basically overwatching a NATO operation to remove arms off rebels, and somebody shouting down at the helicopter, a plane has just flown into the World Trade Center. And nobody believed it, unsurprisingly. We were all down the helicopter, and to be honest, I think half the people in the plane couldn't even compute as to which World Trade Center they may have been talking about. But we all started running up the hill from the helipad, nevertheless, because there was one television in a fruit factory that we had commandeered that we also used to sit around. We ran in and got in just in time to see the 2nd plane flying into the World Trade Center. It's not a laughing matter, clearly, because of everything that transpired and all of the lives that were left, but it's hard for me to think of that time without smiling, because the thing that sticks in my mind the most around all of this incident and quite literally activity that changed our lives, and indeed I would suggest the world, was a sergeant who wasn't in my platoon, but a Sergeant Morgan, fantastic chap from the Valleys in Wales, who was in the Pioneers. And if you know anything about the military, the Pioneers within an infantry battalion are, I was going to say solid. They're both solid in terms of reliable, but also solid in terms of sometimes you get some comments from people that you really shouldn't be getting from anybody. Sergeant Morgan was no exception to this, other than the fact that he was also one of the most perceptive human beings we've ever come across. He was obsessed with tractors and knew everything about them. He was obsessed with most things he did, but he also had a ridiculous understanding of just life in general and diplomacy. And I remember Sergeant Morgan, as we were all watching these screens, like I said, we ran off the helipad and we'd been out on the ground for 5 days. I remember him saying, "We'll be going to Afghanistan." And I thought, I'd heard of Afghanistan, but I think because of a Rocky film or something, I'd never ever considered going there, what it was like. And more importantly, I couldn't work out why Sergeant Morgan had said so. And then we, of course, watched everything unfold for the next day and a bit, and it was only a matter of time before they were linking everything to Al-Qaeda and linking it to Osama bin Laden and linking to Afghanistan. So I spent the next 3 days trying to work out how Sergeant Morgan had understood how he had basically dated everything as soon as he ran off of the thing. We literally flew back from Macedonia. We're told, don't unpack your bags, you're going to Afghanistan. So again, other than the fact that Sergeant Morgan had prejudged a Cobra decision to deploy the Parachute Regiment to Afghanistan, we went. We were always exceptionally excited to go on operations. That's the truth of it, because we lived for it. We thought that was our very, very being, and indeed, of course, as an organization, that was it. But in terms of lessons and in terms of my faith, what was interesting for me at the time was the mantra of all officers within the military is certainly, and within the Parachute Regiment, but actually all of the regiments, this is something that is really borne out at every stage. In order to lead, you have to put yourself last. Now, it's not a coincidence at all that that is clearly a lesson that Jesus taught, and indeed we see many, many times through the Bible. And these tours were really good examples of, for me, really vivid examples of why that was so important. All of our soldiers that we went away with, and actually the sailors and the airmen from across the forces, from the UK and indeed all of the other countries that we served alongside, we came from such diverse backgrounds and walks of life, all there to do one thing. And so the whole concept of hierarchy and leadership was something that was absolutely critical to everything we did. The reality is that if you're outside of the military, it sometimes might seem that the military is quite hierarchical and everybody kind of is regimented and does what they say. But I can assure you, does what they're told, but I can assure you that, yes, that is true from a kind of systemic point of view. There is an organizational structure that everybody fits within. But when you go on an operational tour, nobody is ever going to do something that they don't think is either the right thing to do or they believe in, because people generally don't follow people just because they're in charge. And when everything goes horribly wrong, which I'll come back to in a minute, when everything goes horribly wrong, then actually we all revert to type and we all revert to a level of self-protection which supersedes any sort of hierarchical structure. So for the military, service and leadership are closely intertwined, and that was another point. So from a faith perspective, actually that was quite simple because, of course, I was very familiar with that concept prior to getting to Sandhurst, and of course then having it really imbued within me in Sandhurst. I got to live it and see it on many occasions, and not necessarily getting it right all the time, but absolutely getting to see the benefit when it was right, and that's a lesson that always stayed with me. Now, I talked about when it all goes horribly wrong, and the fact of the matter is it does in life generally, doesn't it, for all of us. I think we will all admit that it's that anybody who said that they had a very easy life all the time in every circumstance is probably just simply forgetting things where they were quite challenging at times. And so this point for me is less about the actual incident itself, but really to illustrate the point. In this particular tour, which was Afghanistan, there are countless examples of where we had struggled to achieve what we were trying to achieve. In the case of Afghanistan, the first time we were woefully under-equipped, arguably the second time, the third time, the fourth time as well. But we were woefully under-equipped, not just in terms of our physical equipment, but in terms of our numbers and presence for the task we had at hand. We generally did the best job that we could. And as you can see in that particular, that's in Kabul. That compound was actually overrun shortly afterwards. Not by people who meant us harm. There were lots of those people out there, but it wasn't by people who meant to harm. It was actually just people who were scared on the outside. But the reality is, when everything's going horribly wrong, it's quite difficult to tell the difference between the two. And there were a number of incidents, both which resulted in fatalities and some many majority of which didn't, where the wrong decision was made at a really quite short, in a really quite split second. And so again, a bit about the leadership, but more importantly about the faith piece. What you do when it goes horribly wrong is something that I found myself fortunate enough to try and work out quite quickly, but of course the reality of the answer is different each time. This was the first tour, and so for me this was my third operational tour. My first was Sierra Leone, my second was Northern Ireland, so was my fourth. My third was Macedonia, and my fourth was this first Afghanistan tour. So by the time we had gone to Afghanistan, I had happened to have deployed three times beforehand, which is quite helpful. And I went to Afghanistan five times, but this was the first tour. This was the first tour on which I saw soldiers who would avidly say they did not believe in God. And I'd had the conversation before, because as a group of men, you generally talk about everything, as you know, when you spend enough time with each other. Soldiers who said they didn't believe in God, crying and effectively curling up and calling out for a God, if there is one. And in this particular case, when that first happened to me, and I've seen the same thing on a number of occasions, it was actually not people from my unit, although I have seen it from the Apache Regiment. So, you know, the idea that we can get past that is not the case. When it all goes horribly wrong, people revert to type. In this particular case, it was when this compound was overrun, and We had people from another unit and indeed from another nation who were also there, and they weren't actually at the front. The compound was overrun, and there was people scared. Some people looking for food. Some people looking to ensure that we weren't there, effectively controlling that part of Kabul in a way they didn't wish it to be done. And people were hiding in the corners. So I kind of had again that. Really quite visceral idea of us as really quite frail human beings. And I think that one of the things that I love so much about being a Christian and being a Christian in the military, being a Christian and being a Christian during life right now, is our frailty is accepted, and indeed in many ways is expected. We have a opportunity to expose ourselves as being frail, but still achieve things that we wouldn't be able to do on our own. And indeed, again, in case of military service, that's something I saw quite regularly. But one of the other things that I saw and indeed experienced myself was the idea of being blinded or paralyzed or distracted by the task at hand. Now, I talked about the footage that I showed you very, very quickly earlier on. And if I had carried on playing that video, maybe I'll leave it running at the end, you'll see this actual footage, this scene where this is back in Sierra Leone, and we are extracting some non-combatants. So it was a non-combatant evacuation operation. Rebels were marching on Freetown. It wasn't particularly pleasant. They were chopping people's hands off because the government had a slogan that said, everyone needs to vote, the future is in your hands. The rebels didn't want people to vote. So they said, the way we'll stop you from voting is by cutting your hands off. So that was the trigger for the British government to deploy forces in general to get there. And it happened that the parachute regiment was able to get there quite quickly because we go quite light. And as we were extracting people, and there was a UN operation that was going on at the time, so effectively that wasn't particularly good diplomacy. We literally interrupted another broader operation in order to extract the British and Commonwealth and allied countries' citizens that wanted to be interrupted. But as we did all of that, we were swarmed. The whole thing was covered by the media, and that was distracting. And it was distracting both as a young commander who had a task to do, but it was also distracting for all of our soldiers, not because they wanted to be anywhere near the media, but simply because they were getting in the way, and the frustration boiled over on a number of occasions. One of the things you're charged with quite often as a young soldier or officer, or sailor or airman, is to not only deliver an act of foreign policy in a way that's appropriate, but do so in a way that doesn't escalate the situation worse than it did. And unfortunately, on a couple of occasions, we didn't get that right here either. So that was quite a lesson for me at the time, one that was replicated several times throughout my career and later on. But that distraction and that paralysis because of everything else that's going on, distracting us from the task at hand is something that we learned and saw on many occasions. If I was to take a step back now, and Owen mentioned that I now work for a counter-threat company. I am a director and a non-exec director on a board at Torchlight, and we've also set up a cyber resilience company which I work in. The same is true. Of course, the stage and the audience is very, very different, but the same is very, very true. As I sit here and think about the task that I have at hand and everything else that's going on, it's really quite easy to be distracted. The way in which I found back then, and indeed absolutely find now, and arguably it's easier to do it now, away from the business of it all, to bring back that focus is to just remind ourselves that you're not trying to do it in your own faith, in your own strength, but really reliant on your faith. And for me, actually, it's why things like men's breakfasts, quiet times, our connect group in our church are absolutely key for me, because they bring that focus back and kind of take away the distractions. Anybody who knows anything about the military in general, or indeed some of the places that we found ourselves, will be aware that one of the things most soldiers love to do is fight. It's an extraordinary environment to be in, and as a young soldier and a young officer, that seems really quite normal. I struggled on occasion to answer the question people would say to me, how can you be a Christian in the military and then go and do what you're charged to do? And the reality is there is no right or wrong answer to that. I happen to believe that what we're charged to do is really to look after people who can't look after themselves. But ultimately, at its extreme, it ends up in violence. And that's something I've never really been able to reconcile properly such that I can explain it to people. I mention it to you here because, one, it's something I suspect I'll think about and talk about quite regularly. But two, in many ways, it's a little bit like my faith as well. Finding the need to defend something that actually you're not really equipped to defend. You can give a view about how you feel and then leave it to others to make the decision in that way. And that's often what had to happen with my faith as well. As I mentioned to you at the beginning, I haven't always got my manifestation of my faith right. There were many, many occasions where while serving before and indeed while serving now, I have sat there, and if I was to stop to think about it, I would probably acknowledge that people in that room had absolutely no idea that I was a Christian, and therefore I was no different to anybody else. Of course, there's nothing wrong with that, but if there was a time, if it was at a time where you should stand up as a Christian and you don't do, question mark, what does that say to you about your faith? And that's something that happens to me regularly, and I'm still dealing with. The same is true, actually, in terms of defending something that you actually can't defend. I would have many a conversation with guys that I worked with who would say to me, tell me why X happened in the Bible. Explain to me Jonah and the whale and the... You know, tell me exactly how, after 3 days, God did this. If, why is religion mean X? Macedonia, where, you know, actually, yes, there are different religions that are fighting, but quite often some of the atrocities are being committed by people doing it in the name of Christianity, and of course we've seen that many cases as well. These are questions that I'm not equipped to answer, I would argue, and indeed many of us might find that the case. But again, back to that whole point of faith and what your faith means to you, actually learning that you don't need to have an answer to everything, you simply need to be faithful and allow the God that we serve to be God. And of course, that's in our own personal lives first. It's in our family lives, of course. And then it's in the way that we carry ourselves. And if there's a regret that I have, it's probably trying to explain on a number of occasions why other people need to be convinced of what I have said. I'm not an evangelist by any means. In fact, far from it. And despite going to a church that does lots of plants, or can be coming from a church that has done a lot of outreach, it's not something I spent a huge amount of time doing. But one of the things I am always struck when I speak to evangelists is the idea that they speak and they do their bit, which is share the word and share the gospel and the good news, and then they let the Holy Spirit and God do everything else. And rather than consider that to be religious psychobabble, actually I think it's something really quite liberating about it, even if you're not sharing the gospel, just in terms of the way that we live our lives. If we get that bit right, get ourselves right with God, actually what we generally find is people look at us and say, there is still something different about that, and might inquire in a way that's more useful, more effective than if I was to try and explain it to them. And so what I've found on a few occasions, and indeed I'm still trying to find on more occasions now, is where I simply explain why my faith enables me to do something rather than why somebody else should do something else, that has always been far, far more appropriate. And in the military, I'll suggest, is probably one of the reasons why faith is so accepted in so many variety of guys. I worked with a whole range of people from a whole range of backgrounds, many of whom doing some really interesting stuff, and it was amazing for me. It was also, my military service was also a real lesson that our God is bigger than our mistakes. Which, if you're a kind of person who likes to not get things wrong, which I am, then that's quite important. If you're the kind of person who feels that your position or your stance is important, the way people consider you and view you is important, then again, that probably makes quite a big difference. But the reality is, even if you're just the quietest and most introverted person, we all make mistakes, but our God is bigger than our mistakes. From a military context, there are many people who found themselves serving in the military because a series of events prior to their military service had got them there. So one of the best sergeant majors I ever worked with regularly described, he had been serving for quite a long time when I got there, regularly described the day he found himself in front of a local magistrate, and the magistrate basically said, this is the last time you're in front of the prison or the army. And he chose the army because he didn't want to go to prison, and turned out to be one of the most extraordinary men and one of the most decent men I've ever come across. Many of us have found ourselves where we are right now for a variety of things, but we've made mistakes on the way. And while serving, I made a number of mistakes. I got a number of things wrong, some of which were quite minor and didn't really manifest themselves into anything too huge, but if I was to think back of them, I'd probably do things different. Some of them weren't minor at all. They were really quite major, with potentially huge ramifications that I hadn't even considered at the time. The grace of God, there but by the grace of God go we, was something that I, again, recognize. Here's the issue, though, for me. Sometimes, despite knowing that, I've already described my mother, and I've described my background, and I've talked about a few things that I did, But we would still make mistakes and then look back at them and go, gosh, my God, get me out of this. I won't do that again. And you may not do that again, but you end up doing something else again. And that's still the case now, absolutely still the case now. But our God is bigger than our mistakes. And the concept of grace, which is one of the things that when I did have the opportunity to share with people about my faith, was the thing that most of the soldiers I spoke to were always blown away from. Grace, the idea that we don't deserve the favor that we're shown, and that grace is given freely by God. So again, there were a number of occasions on a number of operational tours where I'd get things wrong. Actually, a number of occasions just in life generally where I got things wrong. And the fact is, our God is bigger than our mistakes, and I see that every day now. So in terms of impact and our faith and how that's impacted me, that's something I'm very, very aware of. I think it's something that makes me a little bit more tolerant of others than I would otherwise be, because that's not something that I'm great at. But it's also something that I think God wants us to absolutely radiate out of Him when we're looking at the characters of Christ. Commitment. The military is a pretty committed place. You don't really have much choice, I guess, is the truth of it when it comes to what we're called to do. But that's not, again, something that is confined to the military. Commitment is something that we all need to portray in every bit of and every aspect of our lives. Somebody described commitment when they were describing it and we were talking about the psychology behind it as doing the thing that you said you would do long after the mood you said you would do it in has left you. And I think that's not a bad way of looking at it. Every single thing that we do, certainly every single thing that I felt that I did, was being watched by other people. So how you behaved when you thought that people weren't looking at you was really quite important. I think that's the case right now. I sometimes look at my 5-year-old son and realize he's been staring at me for longer than I realize, and I just have to rack back in my brain to work out what I've just been doing, because I know very well that he will be copying it at some stage. And this is true. Anyone who has children will know this is the case. But of course, this is the same in our workplaces, our environments that we find ourselves in. It's true in the church, and if you're in a position of leadership in the church, of course, everybody's looking at you. But these are not things that we need to worry about, but they are things that we should keep you aware of. And I think that idea of commitment, doing what you said that you would do long after the mood has left you, is a really quite biblical principle, because a lack of commitment is really quite challenging for most other people. And if you consider that one of the things that we should always seek to do is make other people's lives easier and better, then a lack of commitment doesn't do that. This is something that I'm working out on a daily basis, is the truth. I find it far easier to be committed to work than I do to things that I should probably be getting right with my family. That's the truth of it, and it's something that I need to work out. And so for me, I show this picture because I suspect, and this was just an exercise, this wasn't an operational tour, it was a casualty evacuation exercise. The idea of picking up a fallen comrade and carrying them where you effectively are now taking the strain on their behalf is something that is quite, we can all relate to, even if it's not necessarily dressed up in fancy costume. But actually, the idea of helping somebody who you have said you'll do or turn up to to contribute to the church in a way that you said you'll do it long after you thought about it, these are things that I find quite easy to avoid. As I mentioned, some of those things maybe are back at home. And I have to throw myself back and say, well, if that was a military task, I wouldn't struggle with that. Why are you struggling with it now? And for me, from a faith perspective, I truly believe that God has called me to be committed in every aspect of my life. And I think, again, hopefully that might chime in with somebody here who might feel or find the same thing. At the end of the day, for most of us, when we sit quietly in our rooms or go to sleep at night, all of the noise, all of the business, every single thing that we've got going on is contained, and it's contained in our heads. And for many of our soldiers, many of the sailors and airmen that I served alongside, some of those things that were contained in their heads, as I mentioned, come from a real interesting, sometimes not very pleasant, set of experiences that have brought them to the point that they are right now. And as a leader, one of a number of leaders, one of the things that we were charged to do, and it was a great honor to do, was to look after those under your command. And as I've already talked about, the same is true with our families and the same is true with our colleagues and workplaces. But of course, the same is true of ourselves. We all have things internally that not many people, if anybody, knows about ourselves. And so from a faith perspective, working that out so that even the things that you have, you would not want to tell anybody else, making sure that those things are right with God, is something that I, because of my faith, know that I need to do regularly and have the opportunity to do. And while serving in the military actually is quite amazing. People shared all sorts of stuff because everything is generally open, but actually having left that left the military is not an environment I find myself in right now. And so I guess it would be a question, a rhetorical question to you right now, which is when you are on your own and you are thinking about those things that only you know about and only you are concerned by, where do you take them to and where do you go with them? And I would suggest that as men of faith, we have a God who wants to talk to us about those, who wants to help us deal with those, and we can do so really quite freely. Accountability is something that I've found very, very helpful over time, not necessarily from a military context, although you are accountable all the time, but just from a personal context. Trying to identify people that you can have those really quite open conversations with and therefore enable you to support each other, back to my last slide, both through commitment, carrying the burden from each other. And of course, life is oscillating for most of us. So if you partner up with somebody, the ideal is, of course, that they're up and you're down, and so you then take the strain and look after each other. And this is a concept and a principle that underlies every single thing that we do in the military. The buddy-buddy system, as it was described in the military, is described exactly the same in the police force. It's described exactly the same in other emergency services, because the idea that by doing so, you're not only accountable to somebody else, but you have somebody you can rely on. And this is true right now. And I would encourage all of you, if you don't have a relationship with somebody like that, and it doesn't need to be the most spiritual relationship. In fact, I'd argue it needs to be the opposite, not because a spiritual relationship like that is not good, but because it needs to be from a place in which we find ourselves every day, which is, these are the things that I'm struggling with. I have found that really quite useful for myself, and I would maybe just throw that out as just something that, as a young person who's working things out every day, that's been quite useful. So, you know, it's quite hard to talk about my faith and what it has meant to my service and my time in the armed forces without really linking my time pre the military and my time post the military together. But I consider myself extremely, extremely fortunate. We are really quite small specks in many ways when you consider everything else that's going on. If you consider the geopolitical situations that we live in right now, if you consider the national security context in Westminster this week, if you consider some of the countries that maybe some of the people in these rooms and the room comes from, certainly that you will have heard of or maybe visiting in the future, and the scale of instability that people are going through. And then you think back to the gospel and you think back to our lives and you think back to what we have as a gift, and the idea of a small speck is kind of shaken up and stirred, because small specks who can make quite a big difference to people's lives, everybody that we meet. So I like to think that God has given me a opportunity and a background to find myself in a way that I can contribute. And contribute more than you consume was always our mantra. And I think that is the Christian way, to contribute more than we consume. The only difference is our contribution is not necessarily simply of ourselves, but actually of our faith to those that we come across. That doesn't mean ramming Christianity down people's necks, my personal view, although evangelizing is clearly very important. What I think it does mean, though, is being the committed and the faithful and the decent person that other people can look at and say, what's different about that person? And maybe even come and have a conversation with that they wouldn't otherwise have had. And in the military, a place that is intensely tribal, organizations that is very, very, very proud, with a huge number of egos in, of which I was probably one at part, certainly. I found that as something that really did make a massive difference to me personally, and indeed hopefully to other people's lives. The ability to curt alongside somebody and say, what is it that's different about you, and how can I have some of that? So that's it from me this morning in terms of faith and service in the military. I could tell you war stories, but most of them wouldn't be about myself. They'd be about other great things that other people have done, and my ability to sit alongside some of them and either have a very small part or simply witness it. I saw people who, as I mentioned to you before, have absolutely no faith whatsoever, turn to Christ when everything was going very, very wrong. I equally saw people who I thought were completely sorted, the best leaders and best men, women I have ever come across, completely fall apart when everything was going wrong. And in both cases, the reality is that we don't know how we're going to respond when things go quite wrong. But in our everyday lives, I would suggest that we all have our own little examples of everything going wrong. The way that we respond, I think, is really quite telling. But God is bigger than our mistakes. So just because we didn't respond once in the way that we think we should have done, doesn't damn us, and certainly doesn't mean that we can't do next time. And I would encourage you to maybe remember that. I'd also encourage you to keep doing what I hear that you're doing. You know, I live not very far away from here, but I go to a church that is very, very loosely connected. And I hear about this, and I've seen a few faces here, but we've heard much about some of the things that are going on here, and I think it's fantastic and amazing. And I really appreciate the opportunity to come and speak to you, but also to really kind of see the men that are amongst and behind much of this. Our God is a pretty amazing God who will take us, specs, and our ability to offer ourselves and do something quite impressive things that we won't even see long after we've left. And even when we make mistakes and get things wrong, He generally has a way of cleaning up and making better out of it. So I'd encourage you to keep doing that. And like I said, thank you very much for letting me come and speak to you. Other than Pete, please. 11. So the question was about leadership and faith. And the worldly view of leadership, which is often harsh and maybe ungodly, some of the characteristics of leadership. But the question was, what was my view on that as a person who has occupied a few positions of leadership over the last few years? And my view is actually, I think you're right. I think that there is a perception out there that in order to be a leader, you need to be behave a certain way and to be harsh. And actually, I don't think there is a certain style of leadership that's more effective than others. I think there are different styles of leadership, but I think that the very heart of it, leadership is about service. Serving to lead, as I mentioned to you beforehand, I think is absolutely key. And the best leaders, in my experience, are the most active servants. I also think that as a leader, your job is simply to create the conditions for those underneath you to succeed. That's it. So if you do that, and if you serve, my view, and I believe what I've seen, and of course some of it has been in military context, but I've seen this at political levels as well, I've seen it in a commercial context now, I've seen it in family levels. If you do those two things, generally I find that good leaders do that really quite effectively. Whether that was commanding units of 780 or whether that was commanding teams of four, the principles are still exactly the same, and so that's generally been my experience. So I think leadership is about something. Yes.
I'm sure you're an old soldier in the military project, and that is the part of the
country. Yeah. It's, so I don't know if you heard the comment, but a colleague or a former friend who served in five different operational contexts, who suggested there were no atheists in the trenches. And I can see why he says that. As I mentioned to you, when everything goes horribly wrong, we all revert to type and we all go somewhere. That doesn't mean that actually everyone turns to faith. But it does mean that they go somewhere, and that somewhere is not in yourself. Because if it was in yourself, you probably wouldn't be cowering in a trench, or indeed not necessarily cowering in a trench, but being certainly concerned in the trench. You'd be doing what it was you thought you could do. So I understand his sentiment. I think it's fortunate. You know, the reality is we serve a God who's very real, but there are lots of other religions out there who believe that they are serving a God, or indeed gods, that are very real. And so, again, back to my point about how you justify and explain that, don't even get involved in that. For you personally, and what that faith means, whether it's a trench, a physical trench that we would find ourselves in, or just an emotional trench or a metaphorical trench, I think these are things quite good. Where do we go in that case? I think turning to our God is the way forward. So the question was, were there any instances whilst I was serving where I was instructed to do things that were not godly? And if so, how did I reconcile that and what did I do there? And it's a good question. So here's the interesting thing for me, and it's strange bearing in mind, as I said, I served for 17 years. I can think of no instances where I was instructed to do something that was ungodly or indeed would counter what I think Christian should have done. But I was instructed to do so. I can think of a number of instances where I instigated or asked or allowed ungodly things to happen, if that makes any sense. So I think the question was probably about being given a direction and orders and indeed how you respond to that. And I don't have many examples where I could give you that, although I have lots of examples of things that we were asked to do that you would question from a... whether it was the right thing to have done. I described, for example, how we literally pushed the UN out of the way in order to extract our people. But I wouldn't suggest that was a godly or ungodly thing to do. It was a task. It wasn't the right thing to do politically. But you know, whether that's instances of sexual nature, where conversations or behaviour is going on, which I allowed or indeed certainly didn't get involved in, or incidences of what some people might consider to be bullying. At the very best, it was probably really extremely high jinks. The fact of the matter is, though, somebody felt uncomfortable at the end of it, and I should have stepped in and done something about it, and I didn't. You know, I can think of lots of those, and that's when I say, when I talk about mistakes that we make and things that we get wrong, that I No, I wasn't actually, is the truth of it. Including when given direction or guidance to do things which are quite hard to reconcile, because you know at the end of it, other people are going to lose their lives. And so then therein is the point where I say that there is sometimes no right or wrong answer in our individual lives. And people have asked, how do you reconcile being in the military and taking other people's lives? So it's a big question, but no, they were not things that I considered to have been ungodly in themselves, especially because I feel that I was, and this is again grace, nothing else. Everything we were ever asked to do was in order to protect people who can protect themselves. Is that always right? Was the motive behind these things always correct? I honestly couldn't tell you that I know that there's always the case. I simply don't know. But what I believe, and I regularly prayed, was that what we were physically doing was what we needed to be doing in order to protect people who couldn't protect themselves. Yeah. It's a challenging one, and I don't. Taking life is not something that anyone ever does easily. After they leave, yeah, it's again another good question, Andrew. The question was, does the military provide enough support to people after they leave, considering our emphasis on the buddy-buddy system and looking after each other while serving? And this is something here in the UK, and I can really speak mainly for the UK, and there'll be people from other countries here. We've grappled with this society because actually the view in the military is that the military has a responsibility to the service personnel when they leave to ensure that they step out and are looked after. But also society has a responsibility to taking and receiving these individuals who've been serving society and making sure they're looked after. And we have a covenant, as it's described here in the UK, an unwritten covenant between society and the armed forces. Does it do enough? The reality is, of course, more can always be done. My wife Gemma, an amazing woman, is the most unmilitary woman you'll ever come across. So the reality is, when I got out of the military, I was effectively stepping into, and because when I lived in Hereford, I was there for 12 years. So I was away a lot. Gemma stayed in London. So of course I came back to London regularly. Indeed, we stayed in the same church and all that good stuff. So stepping out for me wasn't a major issue. But many people struggle. Many people struggle, and they struggle, even if you put experiences behind the struggle, just because they've left a real close-knit family where some of them have joined really quite young, spend a long period of time in there where lots of things have been taken care of for them, and then they're out all of a sudden. And many of them struggle because some of the experiences that they've had have affected them. And that effect is felt periodically in their life after the service. So does the military do enough? More can always be done, but I do believe that there's a good, there's a very good package and a very good support network and structure that exists that we can all plug into. But it's the onus is on all of us as a society to look after people we find in our societies. Yeah, so the question is, in my experience, and indeed as I've gone through life, I must have come across people from other religions, other ideologies. How has my faith played into those conversations, and indeed what have my experiences been throughout that? And you're absolutely right. Both in the armed forces, so amongst ourselves, lots and lots of religions, you know, we reflect society, and so therefore our society is very diverse. But of course, then going overseas, many of the countries that we go to are from cultures that are very different to ours. And even now, actually, in the job that I do, I spend a lot of time in the Gulf right now because of a number of the governments that we support and a number of the clients that we have. And so the Gulf states, very, very Islamic states, regular conversations that come up. There hasn't been one standard response or indeed one standard experience that I've found. In fact, on a number of occasions, probably by far the majority of occasions, I'm not saying this because I'm proud of it at all, but a number of occasions, my faith has simply not been a factor of the discussion. Maybe in the case where sometimes it should have been, but it wasn't. Either because I felt that it wasn't necessary or appropriate, sometimes because I was scared to even mention it, because I didn't want to deal with the inevitable barrage of questions, comments, thoughts, and offerings since. That's the truth of it. But on a number of occasions, my faith has allowed me to have a really quite interesting debate. On a number of occasions, that interesting conversation. I'd love to say that I've been able to share my faith and people have thrown down their views and taken up my own. That's just not the case. But on a number of occasions, we've ended up in a position where, at the very least, there's an understanding that our God is a real God. Now, Islam is the religion that I've had that conversation with people about the most, but there've been others. There was an incident while I was at university of a chap who was by his own description, he was a sorcerer. He practiced witchcraft, and so we would have quite long, late conversations at night about why that order wasn't going to work out that well for him. And it didn't, unfortunately. It really didn't work out well for him. But a really good example to me at the time, who was really, really quite flippant. I'd love to say I was having this conversation. It was really deep and meaningful. I wasn't. I was having this conversation because, in my mind, why would you do that? And his name, Duncan, this chap, was on a really downward, slippery slope as he was kind of dabbling in stuff more and more. Really challenging. Easy to share your faith when you're confronted with somebody who's effectively giving you really quite open spiritual conversations back. Less so when you're having conversations with members of royal families who believe that Islam is the way, the truth, there's nothing else. Challenging. So no one standard answer. Did it come up regularly? Yes. Does it still come up regularly? Yes, it does now. I guess I just probably adapt each time.